Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds today with our friend Rich Guthrie. He is here to help answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a seasoned birder, if you will, a former NCON specialist and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray, good to be here.
You know, it's nice out. The birds are out. I saw one on the way into work today.
A bird.
I saw a bird.
Well, there you go.
I think it was a parrot.
Really?
It could have been an eagle. I'm not sure. One or the other.
Did you get a picture?
No. Might have been a penguin.
Okay.
Yeah,
well.
Not sure. But I definitely saw one on the ride.
Well, we'll try to figure it out, Ray. We'll keep working on it.
All right. Yeah, I'll get a picture next time. So what's new with you, my man?
Hey, spring is in the air. Do you notice?
Yeah, I did.
Well,
I saw that
enjoy
bird.
It? Yes.
Yeah, well, it was great.
Yeah. Back to winter.
Here's an email that came in, Rich. Yesterday, by the way.
Yesterday.
Chris in Cornwall and Hudson beat the rush. Starts out, hi, Richard Ray. It's a salutation. I've been birding a few Orange County hotspots like Goose Pond, Stewart, and Doodletown for many years.
Doodletown, yes.
It's very whimsical names, like Dr. Seuss. All the doodles down in Doodletown. The number of species, especially warblers, have been down this spring, at least for me. Have you noticed this, too? And if so, do you have an explanation? Thanks, Chris in Cornwall on Hudson.
Well, it depends on when you were there. And of course, time of day is important, too. But the answer to your question basically is no. They have been, the warblers have been plentiful.
Yeah.
I should qualify it. Not as many as there used to be.
Why?
Well, over time, the numbers of songbirds, the birds that migrate to the tropics for the summer, for the winter, and come back here to nest, those numbers have been dwindling on the most part.
Just around here? Or have they moved elsewhere?
Globally, let's say. And it's all about habitat destruction and disturbance.
Okay.
So the warblers have been coming through, not like they were when I was a kid. You know, the term dripping from the trees was one we used to say quite often.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many it was distracting. Unfortunately, we don't have those numbers much anymore. Occasionally, you'll find a wave of them, a surge of them coming through. And you'll go out in the morning and there'll be warblers all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Other mornings, they'll be hard to find.
Yeah.
One or two, three. So, but the word out there is that others have been seeing lots of warblers in suitable habitats on good mornings. And so I think especially places like you meant that the listener mentioned.
Yeah, Goose Pond, Stewart, Doodletown.
Doodletown especially. Doodletown Road is in Bear Mountain State Park.
Mm-hmm.
And there is actually a ghost town down there named Doodletown.
Yeah.
And a road that goes to it. And the woods along Doodletown Road have become somewhat overgrown.
Yeah.
And a magnificent migrant trap and a rare bird breeding area.
Well, really?
Yes.
I'll be darned.
Things such as cerulean warblers and Kentucky warblers are nesting there now, and the blue wing warblers. There's quite an assortment of unusual birds that are found along the Doodletown Road.
Okay.
And the reports lately are that they may be a little late in arriving.
Ah.
But it was a strange spring.
All right.
Well, and but they are there now.
Well, Chris and Cornwall, just hang in there. Have a little patience. You'll be rewarded. This one came in via Twitter. I mean, here you go, Rich. This is
a tweet.
Yeah. This is from Matthew. Says, every morning I hear what sounds like lasers. What kind of bird is making that wild sound? My fiance and I call them laser birds. Any idea?
I'm trying to picture or get an image of a sound of a laser.
So they really don't make sounds, do they?
No, no. Yeah. It's kind of
a cartoon laser. Go ahead.
Is that? I don't know. I suppose it depends on the frequency of the laser.
Could you do that again?
No.
That sounds like an argon laser. All right, let's go to Mike in Lake George. Mike, you're on.
Hello?
Mike?
Yes.
You're on.
Mike on.
Oh, sorry about that. I left my car for a second.
Okay, you're on.
So this morning, I was up on Lake George, and I saw this crazy predatorial bird fly over the South Shore, the South Bay, and swoop down into the water and grab something. It was pretty awesome. And what I don't really know was whether it was an eagle or was it an osprey. I've seen osprey before, but this one looked much bigger.
Well, eagles will do that as well, you know. And, of course, the adult eagle is very distinctive. You should have no trouble recognizing that, with the black body and the white head and the white tail and a huge size. The young eagle will be mostly chocolate brown looking. And
Go ahead. Oh, well, yeah, all I could make out was the darkness. There was no really color to it.
Okay, well,
the sun was hitting it, so it was
more than likely that was a young bald eagle that you saw. And they will do that. They will grab a fish off the surface of the water. Now, the osprey is a type of eagle that actually makes a plunge dive into the water to grab
cool.
a fish. It's spectacular to watch. A big splash. And then they grab the fish underwater and pop up to the surface like a cork with their wings spread out and then take off. And then once they're in the air, if you have the backlighting of the sun behind it, it's really fun to watch. They shake like a puppy dog and shed all that water droplets into the air. It's a wonderful spray.
Oh, really great.
Then they go up in a little further on. They'll take that fish that they happen to catch in some haphazard manner and turn it around, flip it in the air so that the head is pointing forward just for a little aerodynamic.
Oh, really?
Yes, efficiency.
So it does a little juggling in the air.
It does.
Amazing.
A little flip-flop just like you would the pancakes on a griddle.
Wow.
Well, that is awesome. I totally want to see this.
That's some great imagery.
Thank you so much for answering my question, and I feel luckier that I saw bald eagles this morning.
Yeah, I think so too. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call.
Anytime I see an osprey working back and forth over water, I wait and hope that it's going to plunge, find a fish, and go after it.
Hey, that's good entertainment. You're easily amused. Jack in Olive Bridge. Jack, you're on.
Hello, Rich. Listen, I live south of the Ashokan Reservoir.
Okay.
And in early April, I had a brown-headed blackbird start showing up at my feeder, which is not unusual. We've seen them occasionally. Where I grew up in Virginia, there were tons of them, but there's here. The curious thing is that I went to the Audubon book, and I saw only a fully brown-headed cowbird. And it said it was a female.
Yes.
So I thought maybe they're females. So I went to the description, the written description, and here's where the complication comes in. It says that males are black with glossy brown heads.
Fine. Mm-hmm.
But then it says females are plain gray.
Well, it's kind of hard to put a label onto a color like that, but they are a brownish shade of gray, yes.
Okay. So this is really, it's not gray. I mean, the picture is clearly brown, and just like the head of the cowbird, the male.
Yeah.
So you think that the gray is not an accurate description?
Right. Just, I'm surprised. It is grayish, but like shades of gray, they're out there.
Shades of
fine.
Gray. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Bill in Albany. Bill.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes. I have two questions. Hummingbirds. Earlier this spring, we put out a hummingbird feeder, and we only put it out for about 4 or 5 days. It didn't attract any hummingbirds, so we thought maybe we had put the hummingbird feeder out too soon. So how do we attract hummingbirds, number one? And number two, we have a bird feeder, and we didn't put any paving block at the base of the bird feeder, so the grass was destroyed during the winter, which is okay. We're going to build a little stone wall, if you will, around the base of a feeder. And we're wondering, because we have mourning doves and squirrels who can't obviously reach the bird feeder, but they feed off the seeds on the ground, if we should just use regular mulch inside the little wall area at the base of the feeder or rubber mulch?
I don't think for the squirrels, mourning doves and sparrows and other ground feeders, it shouldn't matter that much to them. They'll catch whatever spillage there is and they'll miss a few. So it's up to you what you like best. And so I wouldn't worry about that. Now, with regard to the hummingbird feeder, keep it out there. Change it if it's. I just changed mine this morning. Well, number one, I had I had two feeders out, and I brought one of them in this morning and changed the mix in there, a fresh mix. That was actually room temperature from inside.
Yeah.
And I thought the little guys, chilly night this morning, so I thought the little guys would appreciate a little.
Oh, you warmed it up for them.
A little warm breakfast for them to set them up for the day.
All right.
So I would. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
No, you go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I wouldn't worry about the base of the bird feeder. Whatever suits you aesthetically, don't worry about the birds. They'll pick up whatever spillage comes along.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. We got to take a break here. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is here. More calls on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the 2015 annual benefit auction, supporting the preserve's education, conservation, land protection, and stewardship programs on Saturday, June 13th. MohonkPreserve.org for tickets. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, Saratoga Springs, presenting a series of programs featuring live performances, films, discussions, and more in Saratoga and Warren counties. SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org. Kern Compliance Services, Greenwich, New York. Compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance and annuity carriers and their distribution partners, kerncompliance.com. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, hosting their annual plant event Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., over 200 varieties of vegetables, flowers, and herbs raised in their greenhouse, children's and family activities, farmproject.org. And the Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Nice to have you joining us at home. The number to call, or wherever you are, in the car, or what have you, 1-800-348-2551. If you're, avoiding work and you're at work and you're listening, that's fine, too.
We don't judge for that.
Yeah, we don't judge at all here. You can look out the window.
Especially if you're out bird watching.
You may see a bird. I mean, I saw one coming in today. It was very nice.
The word is out.
A parrot, I think, yeah. You have a couple of events, first of all.
I do. This Saturday at Thatcher Nature Center at Thatcher State Park in Voorheesville, New York.
Oh, beautiful.
I'll be doing a little early morning bird walk. Well, not that early. It's 8:30.
Wow.
I know.
This birding life must be pretty relaxing. 8:30 is early?
Yeah, sleep in morning on Saturday. Anyway, that's up at Thatcher Nature Center, free of charge. Anybody is welcome. Bring your binoculars if you have them.
Okay.
They have a few to loan if you don't.
Right.
And then on June 13th, the Saturday...
You sound
June 13th,
a little...
whatever day of the week that is.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not. I have to check the calendar. June 13th, that I do know.
Okay, fair enough.
Boat ride on the Hudson River.
Oh.
Benefit for the North River Friends of Clearwater.
Where are you going?
We're going down the river,
okay.
Looking for eagles, looking for egrets, eagles and egrets, and other good things that we might find, as well as the company of everybody on board.
Okay, and will there be a cash bar?
Presumably.
All right. Sure. All right. So what's the date?
June 13.
Okay.
And for details, because I don't have the flyer with me,
yeah.
But you contact me.
All right. So what's your email address?
Richard P. Guthrie.
Yeah.
That's G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
Right.
At gmail.com.
So Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
Correcto.
All right, sir. And this one came in via email to voxpopwamc.org. Hi, R&R. Rich,
R&R.
Rich and Ray. A month ago, I observed a small kinglet-sized, very dark bird foraging on the ground in mixed forest. The plumage was nearly black with no obvious markings. I could not find it in an Audubon guide. Any ideas? That's from Joe.
I have to wonder where this was and actually when this was again. And I'm still, what I'm doing is kind of like as the professor would be doing... smoking the pipe.
I'm glad you're not smoking a pipe in
right
here.
Just nibbling on the pipe stem as I'm trying to come up with an answer here, and I'm hard pressed. Now, a small dark bird, on the ground in a forest. I'm thinking that lighting might be a factor here and how much of the bird you're able to see. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come up with siskin, just a small dark bird that might apt to be feeding on the ground a little earlier in the season.
Yeah, well, maybe Joe can email some more details about where and when.
Yeah, the siskin is a bit of a winter visitor that a few are still around.
Okay.
And they would be a forest bird, small and dark looking at it, especially in poor forest lighting. Yeah. Although another bird may come to mind as we go.
Well, I'm thinking a parrot.
Well, you saw one, I heard.
Yeah. All right, so Joe, if you have more details, you can email us, voxpopwamc.org. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Colleen in Albany, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
I have a pair of mockingbirds that up until this year seemed to, every time this year, would follow. I know this sounds crazy, but they would follow my car as I pulled into the neighborhood, and they would fly ahead and land on a mailbox, and then as I would pass them, they would pick up again and fly. And when I pulled into my driveway, they would be landing on the tree or the shrub next to my driveway. I know that sounds weird, but it just seemed like they did it year after year. A week ago, as I was pulling in my street, I noticed a bird. It looked like it had maybe flown into a car or accidentally got hit by a car, and it was on the side of the road, and it was obviously dead, and it looked like it was one of the mockingbirds.
Oh.
And since then, I have not seen the mockingbird.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if they pair up, and if one dies, does the other one leave? And also, is it weird, or am I just imagining things that they tend to follow a human or mark them? I don't know. And then since I don't see them anymore, is there a way to attract mockingbirds to my yard? I love their music.
Well, wow, a lot going on there. And as far as that mockingbird and your car, I'm wondering if the neighbors have experienced this as well, if it's just you. Is there anything special about your car? Now, I'm going to speculate here. First of all, it's very unusual. I've never heard of such a thing, that they would actually go out, meet and greet you, and escort you back to your territory.
It's like Snow White or something.
Or their territory. Yeah. It's like a Lassie story, you know. Come quick.
Yeah. Does she live in Doodletown?
But they don't stick around. You know, like if once I get out of my car, they don't hang around me or anything like that. It just seems odd.
Well, I'm going to go off on a branch here.
Well, that never happens.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go off on a limb here, and here's a story I'd like to make up. That the mockingbirds identify your car as part of their territory.
Wow.
And when they see this missing part of their territory returning, they come out to greet it, to guide it back to the boundaries of their established territory.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. I mean, it's probably nowhere near accurate, but it.
Yeah, but it makes it feel
so. This really, a fun
this is
story, though.
Something you have not heard of before.
I have not until just now.
You stumped
and
the band,
I heard it
Colleen.
On the radio a minute ago, so maybe it is. It's like finding it on the internet.
So, what about pairing the two? Are they monogamous?
No.
No.
No. So it happens quite often out there, where one of the pair will disappear, and the other one will find another. You know but for the most part, the likelihood is that it was a bonded pair that stayed together year after year. Since they don't migrate, they just don't leave. They just boot the kids out, tell them to find their own neighborhood, and they will stick around. So one is a made-up story, and the other one is the way it is.
And is there anything I can do to attract them back to my yard or my area? Because they don't really frequent the bird feeders.
No, they don't. They're not a feeder bird. Apparently, what you have been doing works. So I would continue to do that. And if it means no further action, just wait and see, then that would be the recommended course. Because obviously, they found it suitable. And they or another pair will find it equally suitable, and it will be just a matter of time for the replacement pair to identify, locate, and occupy that territory that you have.
Just rev your engine.
Yes. Toot your horn.
Thanks, Colleen.
Thank you very much.
Let us know if they return. Let's go over to Harriet in Woodstock. Hi, Harriet. You're up.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rich.
Hello.
A question. I heard just like the tail end of a news program, and was saying the governor is going to be signing an agreement or initiating something that has to do with reducing nighttime illumination in the in New York City. Does anybody know about that?
Sure.
And, yes, and, about the migrating birds, and also just to say that it's a tremendous disruption to their migration lives for the illumination that we insist on at night. And so what do you know?
Well, it's very true. In fact, New York State, New York City has been doing this. The Empire State Building would darken their building during migration. They've been doing that for years. Because what happens is our songbirds are night migrants. They fly thousands of miles from the tropics back home and from here back to the tropics at night. And so any kind of disruption, any kind of light source is will attract their attention. And unfortunately, over the years, we found out that it would often lead them to the fly collision course.
Wow.
And we'd lose thousands of birds during a migration night. So
terrible tragedy.
And
tragic.
What's happening is it's a wonderful thing that the city administrators and building managers have recognized this. I know the city of Toronto has undertaken dark night procedures during when there is a heavy migration going on. And right now is that time of year when this goes on. It's a good thing to dim the lights, darken the lights for the benefit of the birds migrating through.
Terrific.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Great to hear that. And remind everybody to not light so many lights. We don't need them.
I like that, Harriet. Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye Thank now. You. Over to Ken in Walden. Ken, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
You're on.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call, Rich, Ray. Actually, I have a comment. I've become quite an avid bird watcher in my backyard, and I bought a book to identify them. And, you know, the book is great, but for people that are tech-savvy, there's also a great app that's out, and it's a Cornell University app. It's called Merlin Bird ID.
Yes.
And it's a very helpful thing. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Oh, yes.
I use it all the time now, and it's great. It gives you categories to identify the bird, such as the colors, the, where it was located, where it was feeding or found, and it gives you very good pictures of in-flight pictures and male and female. Mm. And
I agree with you 100%. I highly endorse it. And there are a couple of other ones out there, too. Birdseye. NA, as in North America, is another one that is very useful and helpful out there. And also gives you the sounds of the birds as well.
Oh, that's
songs.
Good to know. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to pass this on because I found it to be such a helpful resource in identifying birds at a quick notice. You know?
Yeah, Ken, you're right on. And that's the whole new age that we're into. I like a lot of the paper field guides. I have several of them.
Several with you.
I have several with me here, just in case. And also the apps that are out. I carry the apps with me in the field on my so-called smartphone, smarter than me phone.
Ken, thanks for the call. You know, it occurs to me now that the intelligence agencies use facial recognition software. It's very advanced. It seems to me it wouldn't be a great leap to have some software that you hold your camera up and it would immediately identify the bird for you.
I'm sure that would work if you could get that close to the bird. Getting close to some of these small birds is a challenge.
All right.
And the detail, you would need the detail, but I'm sure it would, if you could do it, it would work.
All right. This one came in via email for you, Rich. Here it is. It's from Tom. We have a small spring that runs through our backyard. I dammed it up and created a little fish pond. We put in a bunch of goldfish, and tons of frogs populated the pond, too. A few times a year, a great blue heron lands and eats all the fish and frogs. Do you know of a good way to prevent them from doing that? It's not all that bad because I'm the only one in the neighborhood who has a great blue heron feeder, and the goldfish are only about 20 cents each. That's Tom.
Well, I have to say right off the bat that I'm not a fan of putting strange fish into our native waters.
Okay. Well, it's a dammed up pond, right?
But, you know, dammed up ponds have a way of spilling over into the rest of the waterway, and the fish wind up in ponds and lakes and reservoirs and
okay.
rivers.
Well, frogs, he didn't populate them with frogs,
no,
right?
No, frogs are native.
Yeah.
Frogs, and great blue herons like frogs, too.
Yeah.
And if you keep the pond as it is,
yeah,
without the added goldfish,
yeah,
to the environment, which is something, once again, I have to
discourage. All right. I get it.
If you could have a way of putting a wading pool out there with the goldfish, if you want to keep your heron feeding going on, make it a wading pool with the goldfish in it. The herons will catch on in a big hurry.
Okay.
And you could actually bury that, not bury it, but sink it into the garden.
Sure.
So you'll have a pond with no outlet. That's the thing. No way for the goldfish to get into our water bodies.
Right.
So the answer to all that is, I forget the question.
Well, you know what? You get on your soapbox, and you forget. Now I have to read the question again. Guthrie, you're really... All right, here we go. Do you know of a good way to prevent the blue heron from eating the if there's no food, the blue heron's not
That's
coming,
right? Don't put the goldfish out, and the blue heron won't eat them.
But I'd rather see the blue heron.
Yes. Well, it'll come for the frogs.
Okay.
And frogs are fair game.
So come for the show, stay for the frogs.
Right.
Great frogs. Blue heron. They're beautiful, aren't they? Gosh.
Oh, they're magnificent. Yeah. We're so lucky to have them.
Yeah.
They're such an easy thing to see, and if you have yours coming to your pond for frogs or to your sunken wading pool for goldfish,
yeah,
all the better.
Fair enough. Let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. It's Sarah in Greenfield. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
I have a question about a bird that showed up in my yard. I think he's been in the neighborhood for a while because my neighbor and I have heard a sound that we don't normally hear. But the other day I saw a bird about the size, I'd say, of a crow. It's got a yellow head going, from between its eyes. It's kind of white, and then it goes into a bright yellow down to the back of his neck. And on the sides of his head is like a mottled rust. And the rest of him is kind of a paler, dirtier yellow. But he's got a long tail, he or she. And the tail may have a little bit of yellow towards the base of it, the pale yellow, and then down into kind of like just a tannish gray. Yeah.
Holy Toledo.
And kind of wondering if it's somebody's pet or if it's a wild bird.
It's
and
a
I
parrot.
Can't find it in the bird book.
Pretty sure that one's a parrot.
It could be the parrot that Ray saw
no,
on his
so,
way into
yeah. Actually, Rich's brow is furrowed at this point, so
uh-oh.
I think you stumped him. Go
well,
ahead.
I did send a picture of him to you yesterday.
Oh, good.
You sent it to me?
I sent it to Rich.
Oh, you sent it to Rich.
Okay, so I haven't seen it yet.
At some point when you find it.
So give me a guess here, Rich.
I'm going to say it's a parrot.
No.
I'm going to say that because I have no other possibilities that come to mind.
Sarah, can
I
you
mean,
make...
we were looking at pictures of pheasants.
Yeah.
And his markings on the side, those rust marks, look like a pheasant, but the
oh,
rest
there
of
you
them
go.
Didn't have all those colors. So
well,
it's,
there
could
are
it be a young one?
There are so many different kinds of pheasants out there that some bird keepers will have that will occasionally get away. Now, there's a good pathway to go down. But once I see the picture...
Yeah.
I think we'll have a good idea.
That really won't help us on the radio.
I will.
Sarah, can you make the sound the bird made?
I don't know, except that my neighbor, I don't remember. I just remember it's kind of loud and very unusual. My neighbor thought it might have been a coyote, and then he realized it was a bird.
Okay, Rich, can you make the pheasant sound? Can you make the, Rich is going to make the
pheasant
sound.
You know what, a ring-neck pheasant, and this was described to me by an old gentleman years ago, sounds like an old Model T starting up.
Okay.
Or actually a bad starter.
All right.
Well, it's not that. It's a little more Model T than that. I'm not quite that old.
So that's the best you got?
I'm afraid so.
All right, Sarah, I'm so sorry. We failed you.
That's okay.
And,
that's okay.
I apologize for Rich.
That's okay.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Well, thank you much.
I'm
you
looking
too.
Forward to that picture. And then next time on, we'll have an answer for you.
I will have forgotten by then. Ryan in Albany. Ryan, you're on.
I just wanted to help out the person who tweeted about the laser bird.
Yes. What was that laser bird that I keep hearing?
Well, I don't know what it was, but I think I know the sound. The laser sound is a pew, pew, like laser gun sound, but the bird sounds more like...
Like in video games.
So what do you think, Rich? Oh, but you know what? I think Guthrie is under the weather here. What do you think that bird is?
I'm going to say I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Because I think, Ryan, I think you're on with that sound.
Okay.
I got to hand it to you. You came up with a good one.
The wheels are off the show, Ryan.
Wait. Ryan, what were you going to say there?
I was just saying that I've heard the sound, too, but I don't know the bird.
Okay.
Well, that Ray did a very good partial imitation of a cardinal singing, but that doesn't have the electronic element. There you go.
Ray, I've had enough. Zach, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. Get me out of here!
Support for WMT comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill, upstatedivorcemediation.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment, berkshire.coop. Empire State Youth Orchestras, ESYO 360 Festival Celebration Luncheon, small group performances, the 360 Concert with ESYO musicians and alumni this Sunday, luncheon at 12 noon, concert at 3 p.m., esyo.org for more information. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony. Locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com.
Hey, don't forget about the Lockbox. Our fun drive on air starts June 1st, 6 a.m., Alan Chartok at the helm. And if you want to make this fun drive go quicker, we have found that the Lockbox is a perfect way to do that. Go to WAMC.org, make your pledge, and everything raised between now and the beginning of the fun drive counts on day one. So WAMC.org, feed the Lockbox, and we'll shorten the fun drive. Rich Guthrie is our guest here on Vox Pop. And Rich, this one came in via email from Janet in Kerhonkson. Dear friends at Vox Pop, it reads, for the woman who called in about the mockingbirds, there are many YouTube mockingbird concerts. There you go.
YouTube mockingbird?
There are mockingbird concerts on YouTube.
Okay. Kerhonkson down there in the Catskills,
right,
where we have a few mockingbirds resident.
Right, you are. All right, let's go over to Laura on line 4 in Albany. Laura, you're on.
Hi, this is Laura. Thank you so much for taking my call. Hi, sure. Rich.
Hello.
I actually work for Audubon, so we've met before, and I wanted to give a comment about the person who called about the laser bird, and I think you're right, Rich, in your last guess. It's definitely a northern cardinal. I've heard it described as that before.
Laura, thank you. Thank you.
Of course.
I like affirmation, especially when Ray was writing me about it.
Hey, Laura, can you make the sound better than Rich? Because he didn't do a very good job.
Oh, that was you, Ray.
I don't know. I thought the gentleman who called in did a great job, actually. I've heard it described as a pew, pew kind of thing. And I've had friends actually say, what is the laser bird? And
so I like it, Laura.
It's a newer thing. I think it's the generation that grew up with video games.
Yeah.
Getting into bird now, so you'll hear it more often.
I like it.
I like it. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. We're actually just wrapping up our staff birdathon for Audubon, New York right now. And Rich, I know you've joined us for that in the past. It's a fundraiser. We were all over the Capital District earlier. We saw bald eagles. We saw warbling vireos, Philadelphia vireo, all sorts of things.
Cool. You picked a perfect day for it, Laura. I love it. I wish I could have joined you today.
It was a good day. Well, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the show, as always, guys. And keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Laura,
Audubon, New York. A great outfit.
Let's go to Bill in Latham. Hiya, Bill. You're up.
Hey, Ray, and hello, Richie. Good to hear from you. Last year, I was visited, I think, one time based on your description, listening to the show by indigo bunting, but I don't have the same luck this year. And my crabapple, where it started in the morning, it's already given its blooms off. It's already in leaf right now. But I have basically two questions for you. One is, what do I do with the leftover seed? Is it good to just put it away? It'll keep through to the fall. And where do I place a hummingbird feeder? And, I just had a chance. I heard you guys come on, and I got half my lawn done, and I got a nice – I'm filling my WAMC pint with some lemonade. But later on, I'm going to do some sausage and peppers and stuff with some.
Oh, that sounds good.
Right. I think we want to come over.
Okay, I'll get off the line. I just want to hear what you want on those two questions. Okay. Unless you have some concern. All right?
Fair enough.
Okay, sounds good, Bill. So with regard to the hummingbird feeder, my answer to that is put it wherever you want. And the hummingbirds are good at finding it. If it's the right, you know, bright red with yellow patterns to it or what have you, any combination of that, just wherever you like it, on the porch, they come right up to it. They're very bold when it comes to that. And I like to put one out more or less out in the open. So I'll put two out there, one where they it'll have the most exposure, and then the other one where it is more intimate.
Yeah.
And the hummingbirds will adapt to either or both.
Oh, terrific. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Tom, you're on in Albany with Rich Guthrie.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Rich, the question, is there any woodpecker that makes a square hole?
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, good, because I saw that up in Tower Center Park, and I'm thinking, holy, it was perfectly square.
Mm, good.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for censoring yourself there, Tom.
Good
to kick you off. Yeah.
Yes. Tom, the pileated or pileated, if you're from New England, or woodpecker likes to make a square or rectangular hole.
That's amazing.
Seriously. Okay. It's a characteristic of it.
But there's other work on that tree from a pileated woodpecker because they make them huge, also long holes.
They do. Yes.
And I've seen them around a couple of times. Well, that's good. Thank you for clearing it up.
Oh, wow. And you found, you know, pileated are wonderful birds. They're the huge crow-sized woodpecker with black and white bold markings.
With red, right?
The red on top of the head.
Oh, yeah.
It's the prototype for a woody woodpecker.
There's a lot of them around in this area, surprisingly enough.
Interestingly enough, that wasn't always the case. This is a bird that has adapted over time to being accustomed to human habitation. So it made the niche.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. Tom, thanks for the call. So square holes.
Well, squared off holes. It has corners, right angle corners to
You're
it.
You're kidding me. Any bird make
a carpenter.
Hexagon or anything like that?
Not yet. They're working on that.
Right.
They're still stuck in the circles.
All right, let's go to Mark in Liberty. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Rich and Ray. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Terrific.
I was recently in New Mexico, and in Taos, I saw a black and white bird, slightly larger than a blue jay, not as large as a crow, and have not been able to identify the bird from any websites.
Mm.
Any ideas?
Well, a little more about it. What was it doing, and how black and white, and what else did it have going for it?
Sure. It was... both in the trees and on fence posts.
Okay.
It was starkly white and black on the wings and magenta on the head.
Wow, it's a pretty bird.
It's gorgeous.
A lot going on there.
All right, Rich is going through his books.
I got an idea for you.
All right, which one? The parrot? No, it's not a parrot.
Not the parrot.
No.
A magpie.
No, this is...
A magpie.
All right.
Okay, describe...
That's a crow-sized bird, very conspicuous, and it would be out there in Taos, New Mexico. Not here.
No, they're not around here. I just heard the previous caller mention pileated, and I have one in my neighborhood, and very happily so.
Beautiful.
But it was great to see the magpie. And to finally have it identified.
Well, it's one of my favorite birds, and I don't know why they're not here. We seem to have ample habitat for them, but they're more or less a Western bird species.
Is it a climate thing?
No, yeah. No. They do very well up in Montana, British Columbia, Saskatchewan. You know, the winters out there. When they talk about Canadian high, those magpies put up with it.
Now, have there been any isolated sightings east of the Mississippi?
Well, thank you for asking, Ray.
All right, Rich.
I have one that I've seen in Cortland County, New York.
Really?
Yes, on the interstate. It was feeding alongside the... They're scavengers. They're related to the crows. And they will come down on roadkill and other goodies that they can find. And I suspect that this one was doing that.
Mark, thank you very much for the call. And so, like the crows, a smart bird? Generally
absolutely.
Considered to be a smart bird?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're brilliant birds when it comes to bird brains.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Tom in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Tom.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I just wanted to get a repeat of the app that you folks mentioned on the radio for identifying birds.
Sure. The one is Merlin.
Yeah.
And that's the one put out by Cornell University.
Huh?
And the other one is Birdseye. It's all one word, Birdseye.
Yeah.
And
okay.
You could get the North American version, N-A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you go to the App Store, and it should be in there. I think they're good for the various platforms.
All right, cool. Good
Excellent.
Luck. All right, and then
thank you very much.
All right, did you have a guess on the laser bird as well?
No, I think the cardinal's a way better guess than my guess.
Okay.
I don't think that's even a guess. I think that's totally the right answer.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Tom. We appreciate the call.
Yeah, have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
We're joined today by Rich Guthrie. The number to call here on Vox Pop is 1-800-348-2551. We go over to Tracy in Woodstock. Tracy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Great.
Well, I'm loving this show, and about the birds that sound like lasers, someone called in about that sound.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it too, and it's like asteroids or that old video game.
Yeah.
But I went to look up online, like what birds are used in surveillance, if there are some, because these birds sound so tinny, you know. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on here? And I read that crows are used. They train crows for surveillance. Do you know anything about
it? So what do they
do? They would do that?
Do they debrief the crows afterwards? How are you going to get any information out of a crow?
Yeah, they give them a script.
I looked it up online. Is it true or not?
Well, if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Tracy, that's a new one on me, but I'm not saying it's not true. Yeah. I've not heard about that.
None of my crows do that, but no. I'm going to ask them now to put in a request.
I guess you couldn't really strap a camera on a bird, right?
Oh, they do that.
Do they?
Oh, absolutely, Ray. They have these GoPro-type video cameras, and they put them on the back of a bird.
Yeah.
And follow it through the air. The most amazing videos that come out of that.
So I guess this could be true.
Incredible. Well,
yeah.
All right, now you're frightening me, Tracy. Anything else?
No, I just like the show, and I love all the birds.
Tracy, okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Well, that's scary. Bobolinks. You
bobolinks.
Wrote it on a piece of paper, and
I did.
I don't know why you want me to say it, but there I said it. Bobolinks.
I like the name.
All right.
All right.
That's it?
No.
All right.
So I have a request.
Okay.
Folks out there, our country folk, will have open fields that may or may not have bobolinks nesting in. Bobolink is a delightful black and white bird that likes open fields.
Okay.
And with the habitat group that I'm with, we're working on trying to make our fields successful nesting places for bobolinks.
All right.
So if people will contact me, I have a few short questions to ask that they might share their observations. Fields where bobolinks are, what kind of field it is, the size, the type of vegetation that's in it, and any other associated birds like meadowlarks or field sparrows, and the like. And
so this is a survey of
this
sorts?
This is a what's working survey. What's good for bobolinks, we want to know.
Isn't this the sort of information you could find at that Cornell website?
You could. But you know what? There seems to be a bit of a shortage of that kind of information, and we want to just digest it all and make it happen for our grasslands that we're managing.
All right, so how should people get this information to you?
My email, richardpguthrie@gmail.com. And then if you do send that, if you have a field where you know bobolinks are, or maybe bobolinks aren't, meadowlarks may be and no bobolinks, we want to know what's working for bobolinks and what's not.
Okay.
Bob's your uncle.
All right, fair enough.
So send it to Richard P. Guthrie, and I'll send the simple questions, one, two, all of them, whatever answers you feel comfortable supplying, we'll be glad to analyze.
Okay, and no one needs to give the credit card number or anything, right?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good. Good, Rich.
And we'll have results next show.
Fair enough. Really?
Absolutely.
Assuming there is a next show.
Well, we're counting on it.
Because at this rate, you don't know. Mary in Westford. Mary, you're up.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I am laughing up a storm. You two are sounding like Bob and Ray.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, it's Rich and Ray.
Yeah. Rich and Ray. It's like Bob and Ray over here. I love it. Now, if you did the slow talker, it would be fun.
Very good.
My question is about flickers. We've had a flicker for the last 2 years, or multiple flickers, for the last, I guess, a year and a half. And we didn't have flickers for 15, 20 years. And all of a sudden, they're back. And I was just wondering, is it due to climate change? Is it due to all of a sudden they're coming back? Is it due to, I live up on a mountain, a hill, with lots of trees and woods and things like that. And we haven't had a flicker in years, and all of a sudden they're here.
What's a flicker, Rich?
A flicker is a medium-sized woodpecker.
Oh, cool.
Generally brown with black barring on the back.
Right. Mm. They're much more distinctive than regular woodpeckers, though.
They have their style.
Yeah.
And they have this flash of golden yellow on the wings and on the tail, and a big white bunny rabbit type rump.
Right.
That they display as they're flying away from you.
And the orange on the head is different. The orangey red is a little bit different, too, I think.
So. Yes. Yeah. So what's happening is, obviously, or apparently there's a change in the woods going on around you.
Okay.
And I'm going to blame, I'm not quite sure where it is that you are.
Westford.
We're near Cooperstown.
Okay. That helps.
Okay.
I'm going to blame the emerald ash borer on that.
Okay.
And what's happening there is the emerald ash borer is, unfortunately, and I just showed Ray two of them that
Oh, is that what you... You know, Rich, my eyesight's not very good.
I know. I just happened to find these today, and I'm
bringing
them to
I thought you might have sneezed. So that's... That's an ad. Okay.
Again, Bob and Ray, thank you.
I'm bringing them to the entomologist after the show to confirm that that's
what
they are.
And I missed that part of the show about the emerald ash.
No, this is all new.
It's an insect that is destroying our ash trees. And the woodpeckers are taking advantage of the newfound fodder.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, it's good you have flickers and not good we're losing our ashes.
Okay.
Mary, thank you very much
for calling. Thank you so much. And like again, if when you start doing the slow talkers, let me know. So.
Thank you very much for the call. All right, this is from email, Rich. FYI, was fortunate enough to see 6 sandhill cranes migrating north over Queensbury on April 12th around 7 p.m., up high in formation, like geese one behind the other, too high to hear their call. Have seen them in Fairbanks, Alaska before, and that's from Ed in Saratoga Springs.
Well, terrific, Ed. The sandhill crane is a magnificent, they're the size of the great blue heron, and a bird that typically, that we're so accustomed to having out west, out in the prairie states, up through Manitoba and into the prairie parts of Canada. And in fact, they migrate over the northern part of Canada and through Alaska and into Siberia. There's a small population that actually goes and nests in Siberia and then comes back to North America and winters on the Gulf Coast.
Okay. A crane is a seabird, right?
No. Crane is a long-legged marsh bird, but these our sandhill cranes prefer open fields.
I'll be darned.
Grassy fields.
So rodents
with water.
And whatnot?
Hmm?
What will they eat?
For the most part, small mammals, mice and voles, and frogs and grasshoppers. But the thing about the sandhill crane is that they recently underwent a range expansion and are now nesting in New York State and presumably in neighboring areas of Vermont or Quebec. So the sandhill cranes are increasing in number in the Northeast and in New York and in Vermont. Congratulations.
Okay.
You saw a significant part of a new population.
All right. We have only 30 seconds here. Let's go to Maureen in Fort Ann with a bird identification sound. I love these. Let's wrap the show up with this. Maureen, go.
Well, my sister and I have been puzzling over a bird that we cannot seem to find when we hear the sound, but it sounds like a calliope, kind of.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
I'm not very good.
Well, that was magnificent. Well, I'm going to say it right off the bat that perhaps it was a Carolina wren.
Cool.
Oh, really?
Can you do the sound again for me, Maureen?
Well, now you're beginning to sound like a turkey, but I want to
like
be kind.
You know, it's like a
dog.
Then the other possibility is Veery, V-E-E-R-Y, which is a song thrush that's found in the woods, and it has a beautiful song. You came close to it. You did a beautiful rendition, whatever it was.
And we're out of time, Maureen. What a way to end the show. Oh, by golly. Yeah. Support comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities open 7 days a week. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home. ValleyHomeImprovement.com. Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park, fishing on their 44 lakes, camping, hiking, biking, boating, and events. 44 lakes, 44 choices, 44lakes.com. And Stagecoach Tavern at Racebrook Lodge, Route 41, I should say, Sheffield, Massachusetts, presenting the Tarot Dinner, a dinner theater experience with Heather Fish, live Balkan music, and tasting menu tomorrow. 413-229-8585 for reservations. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie. Thanks to Maureen for the great sound effects. Thanks to Zach at the controls. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, and I don't know how we can top today, but tomorrow it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned for a news update.